What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everyone. This is Kevin Scarrett. Again, I am with Amy Zander. Amy, how are you today?
I'm doing really good, Kevin, and we have a happy birthday to say to you tomorrow, right?
Well, I'm holding off on taking any happy birthdays until tomorrow because I'm relishing in my last day of my 50s. I'll be losing my youth tonight at midnight.
you're young at heart. It's fine.
I'm immature for my age.
Right. No. Yeah, maybe. That's a good thing when you get older, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so I'm not going to sing to you. Nobody wants that. But but no surprise, I do have two favorite birthday quotes. So the first one is and I know this applies. You are only as old as the woman you feel.
Oh. that's good.
Yeah. Okay. And so the second one is a little bit more emotionally touchy-feely. Okay. And it goes like this. There are two great days in a person's life, the day we are born and the day we discover why.
Why?
Yeah. Oh.
Beautiful quote. So true. The very first time I heard that, it really resonated.
I know, right? It's like, have I discovered that yet?
I'm hoping to figure that one out this year.
Yeah, and it's good. It's good on brand for Brand Archetypes, since we're the Explorer brand, right?
So basically, what you're saying, it is all about me.
It is. Well, your birthday should be all about you.
It's all about me.
I take an entire birthday month in May to have it be all about me.
Well, Francie does that. I had never met anybody who did that. So I'm in the middle of my birthday week right now.
Nice.
And I had to confirm that the birthday month goes from, birthday extended to 30 days. She goes, no, it starts on your birthday and it goes to the end of the month, which for me is only 6 days. You know, for her, it's like, 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah. For me, it'd be like 3 days because I'm at the end of May. Yeah. No, I'm not buying that. I don't agree.
Yeah, I know. We had a little bit of an issue.
That's funny. Yeah.
But, it is all about me.
Of course.
And our topic today is your brand is not about you.
It's not. That's so funny. That's a good transition. Your brand is not about you. Your birthday is, but your brand is not.
That's right. So last week we talked about brand mistakes and, made a couple of points that kind of danced around the topic of this whole issue of, what is your brand about? How not to make mistakes so that your brand is about what it needs to be about. And those issues kind of danced around the topic of connecting with your audience, but we never came out and said the words, your brand is not about you. We've said it in the past, of course, we've said it in the past because it's so true. So if the statement, your brand is not about you, is true, then what is it about? So simply put, your brand is about the relationship that you're building with your audience, that you have built with your audience over the past number of days, weeks, months, and years, which, by itself can mean a lot of things. So it's not just simply taking the words I and me and us and our and we out of our vocabulary, which is a very good thing, by the way. If you have not evaluated your own messaging, taking those words out of your marketing is a good thing because it forces you to focus on this relationship of others, not about you and your features and your products and all of that stuff, right? So it takes concerted effort to truly understand your audience, how to shift your paradigm. So that's what we're talking about today, is this shift away from thinking about yourself and about the relationship that you're building. So let's go over some of those things, shall we, Amy? Why don't you start us off?
All right, perfect. One of the things I think I'd point out first is that your brand should be authentic, right? Totally authentic. Nobody likes false messaging, false people, false ideas, and it's pretty easy to spot, I think. So it sounds like I'm thinking about how I will be authentic to myself or my brand, but that's not what I mean. So what we're really talking about here is the perception of your target audience. How do they perceive you? And the only way you're ever going to come across as authentic are if you actually are authentic, if you're consistent with everything that you do and you're true to your brand strategy. We've talked about consistency.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we can't say that enough, right? Yeah. And you're predictable. Your brand's predictable because of your consistency. I mean, we've all kind of seen those businesses where we get used to them having one kind of message and all of a sudden they throw us for a loop and do something different. And we may like it, we may not, but regardless, we're like, that seems weird for that company. And nothing in your marketing or messaging comes across as like forced or contrived or insincere. And I think one of the best examples that you can give of this sometimes too is like where you have those ads that are like not quite funny. Like they're trying to be, but they're not quite funny. You can't really laugh, of course, at it. So that happens. And then your strategy is based on the same emotions your customers feel when they interact with you. So like your advertising is really funny if you're the jester, but plus when you're in front of your customers, you're jokey, you're funny, you come across that way too. So like everything is the same. Yeah, and that just leads, all that stuff leads back to reinforcing your strategy, being consistent, you know, it just comes full circle, like always doing that. So it's definitely a feedback loop as far as be consistent, right?
Yeah, I like the feedback loop concept. So if I am doing something well and that reinforces how the target audience reacts to me, which reinforces me with my brand strategy, which then reinforces them, right? So I think probably an important point, if you're going to use a metaphor of a feedback loop, is in any kind of feedback loop, how do you stop it? You know, and in this case, the feedback loop is a really good thing because we want things to be amplified. So the how you stop a feedback loop is you just cut it. You cut it short, right? So I think the brand equivalent of your metaphor would be being off brand.
Yeah, right? That would short circuit the loop.
That would short circuit the loop. And you know, what you just said, if you're trying to be funny and you're really not being it, you've stopped reinforcing and people aren't going to react the same way that you want them to. And then there you go.
Fizzles out.
So yeah. Next thing I would say, let's consider things that are within our brand that we have control of. But there are things that are outside of our brand that we don't have control of. One of the things that's outside that's pretty obvious is our actual customers. So you have to ask yourself, you know, who are they? What are they thinking? What motivates them? What pains do they have? What problems do they have? And that requires a deep analysis of who your target audience is. And I don't know, Amy, what your experience is. What percentage of your audience are of your customers prior to meeting you have gone through the process of evaluating personas?
Probably the majority of them have not done it had not previously done it formally. I mean, a lot of them have
think about it a little bit.
Yeah, I have a general idea, but they haven't thought about it formally as far as like actually creating personas.
Right. And I would say not, for me, it's not a majority. It's a vast, vast majority, 90, 95%. You know, I'd say 90% have thought about their target audience. They can kind of roughly off the cuff talk about it, but they very few have actually gone through a formal process of identifying a persona. So let's talk about that a little bit. So a persona is you evaluating your target audience demographics. Who and the demographic is who they are, like age, gender, income, you know, family relationships, where they live. You know, if anything that you can describe them, that's their demographic. And then the second aspect of a persona is the psychographics, what's going on in their brain, how they feel, what are their motivations, what are their fears, what are their interests, what are their passions, what are their buying patterns, that kind of thing. Right.
Yeah. So like, just to clarify, when we say personas, we're talking about actually making up characters, as your clients. Like, you know, Kevin, he's almost 60 and he lives in Northern Michigan and he likes to play pickleball and this is what he likes. This is what makes him upset. You know, like actually creating real people so that when you come out with your marketing or a new product or something, you're like, okay, how would Kevin feel about this product rather than how would our vast client base feel about this client? And you can target your marketing so much better when you have a specific person in mind that you're thinking about.
And the more real that your persona feels like a real person, you imbue them with real live personality and character traits. And, you know, he's got a Scotty dog named Fluffy and their kids are in soccer. And my wife attends the PTA meeting once a month and is, you know, the treasurer of the PTA. I mean, wow, how what does that have to do with my brand? And the answer is nothing.
Right.
But it has everything to do with making that persona a real, live, living, breathing human being who's going to react to your marketing. So it makes your marketing less contrived and way more focused on, you know, how a real human being would interact.
Yeah, and it's a fun process to go through to create these people. I love leading my clients through that, where we just kind of, it's because it's creative and storytelling and you're making up stuff. It's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so the bottom line of that is really because your brand is, you know, it's not about you. That's what this whole episode's about. It's not about you. It's about the relationship that you're building with your audience. And how can you build a relationship with anybody if you don't understand who they are and what they're thinking and how they feel and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So you really have to have a deep understanding of who all of your personas are, all of your target audience personas are, before you can connect with them. And by slicing and dicing your target audience up into this handful of personas, and we're talking like 3 to 5, right? If you go through this process and you slice your target audience up into 18 different personas, that's really not usable in the world of marketing. It's just too finely, slivered off.
Right.
So, but if you have 3 or 4 or 5, yeah, okay. Now we're talking about, you know, Sally Sue. What is she going to think when she comes to our homepage? Or what's Joe thinking when he gets this social media marketing post in his feed? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, so the opposite of this, and so many companies are guilty of it, is to try to be everything to everyone.
Right.
And wah, sad, trombone sound.
Right.
Not good.
Yep. This kind of totally goes back to the raving fans thing. Like you want a particular set of people that are raving fans to you and not really care about how everybody else thinks rather than try to be everything to everyone. Right.
So, yeah. All right.
Yeah. Okay. So my turn, right?
Yeah.
All right. Good. My favorite part. So your brand needs to use the right words, of course. And unless you're a first-time listener, you know that we have word banks for each of the archetypes. These are available for $29.95, and they have pages and pages of words and phrases that can be sprinkled throughout your marketing and messaging for your particular archetype. But that's not just what I'm talking here. This idea goes beyond simple word selection. So here are some other tips about, you know, how to use the right words to focus on your audience and not focus on you. So the first mistake that I see a lot of people doing is having to do with their industry jargon. So these are buzzwords, slang words, things like that you use all the time in your business that but your customers might not know or understand. One, like for an example, I'm always saying, oh, like your SEO. And a lot of my customers are like, what does that mean? I'm like, oh, sorry. You know, and I'm just like, I try really hard to explain that one.
To us, it's just a word that in itself has meaning.
But,
forgetting that it's an acronym. Right?
And
I love this buzzword idea. And I think we've said it in the past, maybe even a couple of times, the difference between the target audience using the phrase cheap flights versus the airlines industry jargon of discount airfare.
Right.
Right. Yeah. That's a perfect example of an industry choosing to use its own jargon and forgetting the words that are actually used by their target audience.
Right. Oopsie. Yeah. I mean, there's even like a website now, cheapflights.com or something, right? So
yep.
Mm-hmm. That was a genius move for on their part.
That's right.
Yeah. But I mean, your buzzwords and jargon can be helpful in describing the nuances of your industry like that. that cheap flights thing. But sometimes it can just be really confusing to others who aren't in the know, like using SEO too much. So if you truly know your audience, you can pick and choose when and where you can sprinkle these words and ideas into your mix successfully. And you know, you don't ever want to talk over your audience's head or use things that they don't understand. So that's really important to understand that. So going back to your personas, when you establish those, you could say, you know, would Kevin know what this means? What word would Kevin or phrase would Kevin use to find this product? Things like that. So that can help you clarify too.
Yeah. And boy, it doesn't hurt to ask Kevin
words
and phrases he uses.
Yeah, ask him.
Not me particularly.
Right. Your
not
clients.
People at Colossus. So yeah. Kevin, what would you think
right.
about
that? Right. I mean, you can even go just very simply but powerfully put that kind of out on social media and say, you know, when we use this phrase or word, do you know what it means? Or are you confused by this phrase or words? And then like clarify it and see what people say,
absolutely.
You know? So
people yeah. are kind of afraid of doing that kind of experimental query of their audience because they feel like, oh, well, it makes us look like we don't know what we're talking about, or it's going to confuse people themselves, or no. What you're doing by asking questions like this is you're saying, hey, your input is valuable to us.
Right.
We want to understand you better. We want to hear what you have to say because you're important.
Such a good, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but such a good point. Yeah, exactly. Creating that dialogue and asking their opinion of things. Again, putting that focus on them and not you, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So, and then again, like thinking about your client's inner dialogue. I touched on that a little bit earlier, but like, do you know how your audience feels about you? And that can be a little scary, but have you ever asked them? You know, saying that again thing, like people are afraid to do that. But if you do, this will not only point out to you if you're successfully conveying your brand's ideas, but it can also lead you to approach things in a more focused and tailored way to your audience. So that's just kind of reiterating what you just said, Kevin. But like, don't be afraid to ask these questions of your audience. And always think back to those personas. And then again, you know, you are probably also a client of your business. So you can ask yourself, what gets me excited? Again, this is like the only part of this that we're thinking about, you know, making it about you. But if you look at yourself as a client of your business, then, you know, chances are if you get excited about something because it's unique or special or totally awesome, and if you're jazzed, it might, you know, probably rub off on your audience too. So you can pick and choose the words, phrases, and ideas that revolve around these concepts. And if you get excited, you can get other people excited. It's contagious, right? And you can't really go wrong if you do that. So.
Right. I found that to be true. I mean, I'm a pretty easily excited guy, but
no.
The things that really get me going, get me energized, it comes across in conversations that I have with my clients. And I cannot tell you how many times they cue in on that, clue in on it, and they reply to that later. They respond to it later, and they say, "Yeah, you know, you were so excited when we were talking about such and such, and you know, I really started thinking about it, and you know, I think you're right, and blah blah blah." That energy is contagious, and kind of clue in on that. What you're saying is that the words that you're using matter, but it's also the energy of you know what you're doing. And when I say energy, you know, I'm talking as a jester archetype, right? If you're a neighbor archetype or a mother archetype, your energy may come across as, very intensely caring, right? You know, where you really truly care about someone. So it's not going to come off as bubbling and exciting and all, you know, hyped up like a jester would, but it's still intense, right? And people will pick up on it. Which is, I think, really what you're saying, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can pick the right words, but it also has to do with how you deliver them.
Right.
Yep, for sure.
So I'm going to throw in a concept here, and it's called positioning. And for brand strategists and marketing agencies that are listening right now, there are a lot of agencies that are really big on this concept of positioning, you know, understanding your place in the market and what's happening with industry trends and how do you fit within the competitive landscape, Right. And that, so that's positioning. And so, and again, a lot of time, a lot of strategists put a lot of time and energy into the idea, but we really don't. So what's up with that? How, you know, Amy, why don't you put in a lot of time and energy in positioning?
I don't know. We just do everything different, Kevin.
Yeah, well, that is true too. Well, especially you outlaws.
Right. Yeah. That's true.
So, you know, don't get us wrong. This is a critically important idea. You do need to figure out in your business how you're going to position yourself, how are you going to position yourself relative to your competitors in your market. But, and there's always a big but, this is not what will make your brand powerful and successful. You know, having that deeper understanding helps, but this is not what it's all about. So instead of worrying about how you pit yourself up against your competitors, focus that energy on building a better and stronger relationship with your customers. Instead of worrying too much about market trends, put that energy into finding new and better ways of supporting your already established archetype, right? So to be clear, we do recommend that you put time and energy into figuring out who your competition is and, you know, understanding your market, but these should be dramatically less important to you than the actual relationship that you're building as part of your brand strategy. And how I always reframe it to my customers is, you know, your brand should be kind of like driving in a car. You know, there's a reason why your windshield is enormous and your rearview mirror is this little teeny tiny thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, your rearview mirror is how you look at your competition who is chasing you. Don't worry about the people in the little mirror. Worry about the people who are in front of you. And you know, if that's your perspective, then you don't spend a lot of time focusing and putting energy into looking backwards.
Right. And I think, and we've said this before, but I think that the best thing you can do when it comes to your competition is think about your archetype and how it relates to your major competitors, whether they have an archetype or don't have an archetype, and how you can, you know, use to your advantage your archetype versus what they're doing.
And first time listeners, it just so happens that our episode, was it last week or the week before, we did about going head to head, or I don't know.
It's all a blur to me.
Yeah.
But we'll put a link in the show notes for sure.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. And we have lots of information. I mean, each page on our brandarchetypes.com website of each archetype has the SWOT analysis. So it talks about how the pros and cons and advantages and that kind of thing. So if you're leaning towards a particular archetype, you can go to that page and, you know, look at what we're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, so let's talk about testimonials.
More words.
Yeah, more words, exactly. I just wrote a blog post last week on zdmedia.com about how to effectively use testimonials in your marketing. So if you want a little bit more deeper dive, you can go to that. But
before you start, I got to ask. Yeah. This is a quirky little thing. I saw it. And I've actually never talked to another agency owner about this, ever. So the fact that you're bringing up testimonials is a good thing. When I first started building websites back in the mid-90s, if you can imagine that, I mean, the web was only just a handful of years old at the time. And people started having to come up with content for these newfangled website things. And by like 1997, 98, when I started my agency, I started it in late 97, it was obvious to me that how testimonials were being used on the web at the time felt a little kind of forced. And, you know, they would pile 100 or 500 testimonials onto a web page, and then they would put testimonials up in the main menu, as if people were going out of the way to seek out this information. And I have been explaining to everybody for, you know, 25 years, that's not how I read testimonials. In fact, I would never go to a testimonial page. And then because of this idea kind of popped into my head, I started looking at the analytics of websites. So if you have a website and you have a testimonial page, check out how many people click through to it. Not how many people land on it, because that could just be traffic driven by organic SEO, right? But how many people click through from other pages in your site through to that site. And I bet you'll find that it's less than like 0.2%.
Right.
you know, one out of 500 people will actually want to look at a testimonial page. How do you feel about testimonial pages?
No, I agree with you. And I think that a better option on your website is to have like a scroll bar or something where they kind of like feed through on different pages of your site where people can glance one or two and just so they know that they're there, but not like a whole page dedicated to them. I think they're really effective in social media.
And to be clear, I am saying, yes, you should be collecting them. I'm squawking.
A whole page of them, yeah.
A whole page of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, I think instead of just a random whole page of testimonials, I think case studies, a few really solid case studies would be good.
Which feels different than a made-up kind of
yeah.
Joe S. from Scranton.
Right, right. That's funny. Yeah. Dwight S. Yeah. from Scranton, haha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's right.
Little nod to the office, right?
There you go, right.
So, okay, so with testimonials, so collect them for sure. They're important. And some ways that you can collect them are just people might leave reviews for you on your Facebook, you know, your LinkedIn, your Google page, things like that. So you might just get random ones, people that just are, you know, feeling the need to give a shout out to you. But you can also just ask your clients for them, right? Just say, hey, if you like what we're doing, or, you know, your real clients that you know they like what you're doing, just ask them, hey, do you mind going on there and leaving me a review or emailing me one?
Of course, no, let me throw in a little tidbit there. Of course, you're going to pick and choose which customers you ask for testimonials. And when you do, you're signaling to your customer, hey, I really appreciate the relationship that we have. I would love your input.
Oh.
Boy, what does that sound like?
That's huh. Yeah. Oh,
that sounds like more relationship.
Right,
going.
Right. Yeah. Just another quick thing too. You kind of want, like, especially if you have a variety of products or services that you offer, you want a variety of testimonials that talk about all those different things. So, if you feel like there's a particular product or service you have that isn't getting a lot of attention, you can ask people like, hey, you know, that you know are using that, you can say, hey, would you mind giving a testimonial on this particular thing? I mean, you could say it a little bit better, like Kevin suggested, but, you know, I, the whole point I'm trying to say is there's don't be shy about asking, you know, people to say good things about you when you know that they feel, you know, positively towards you. But, you know, you also have to analyze what people say about you, whether you use it in your marketing or not. And this kind of goes back to when we're talking about how do people feel about you? Do you really understand your audience? And if you really look at the words and phrases they're using in their descriptions, you can get a feel for how effective your brand strategy is. So mm-hmm. yeah, like for example, if you're a lover brand, if the words and phrases in your testimonials are like high energy, passionate and exciting, then you're rocking it. People are getting it. They're feeling that emotion when they're talking about you, talking to you, that kind of thing. But if their words are more soft and subdued and kind of like, meh, yeah, they're good, then, yeah. you know, maybe you need to ramp up your attention. Yeah, to your...
That Amy, she was really okay.
Yeah. Amy's great. Hmm. Yeah. But no. So, like, you know, just make sure that your the energy of the testimonials you're getting are matching your brand, right? So that's yeah. I don't know that a lot of people have really thought about it that way, but that's important.
Yeah, and again, that's the whole episode is, you know, how can you work things to your advantage in this process of building a relationship with your customers,
right.
You know, every point, every interaction that you have, every opportunity you have to reach out to your customers, have yet one more interaction that's positive, that's part of the relationship building process, and all of that is good.
Right.
So
yeah, well, just one more point too is like a lot of times it feels weird to ask people for testimonials, or it feels like tooting your own horn or something like that, but if you think about it, if you let other people talk about you and your business, that's, again, making it about them and not about you, right? So it's actually reinforcing this whole strategy we've been talking about in this entire episode, is that using testimonials is a really good way to make it about them and not you.
Yeah, here's a super user tip. In LinkedIn, because they have the whole testimonial section, you can... connect with your LinkedIn member customers and ask them for a testimonial there. it just seems to me that people who are used to being on LinkedIn are also used to giving each other recommendations and testimonials on LinkedIn. And so you're already catching them in the mode where it's okay to do that. So, you may find if you say you connect with, you know, half of your customers, you know, let's say you have 500 customers and 250 of them are on LinkedIn, I bet you could get 150 of them to give you a testimonial there.
Yeah.
And how fast and easy is that?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So one last point before we wrap up. Let me ask a question to you, Amy.
All right.
Do you think your customers talk about you behind your back?
I hope they do.
Excellent answer. Most people, you ask them that, they'll go, oh, God.
I hope they're talking about me.
You know, what are you talking about? I don't like it when people talk about me behind my back.
Right.
So, yes, that is a good thing. So, the real question should be more to the point is, what are they saying about Amy? and how often do they say those things about Amy, right? So, your goal is to create fans, raving, lunatic, rabid fans, you know, ones who will fall on a sword for you,
yes.
Right? Ones who will rant and rave and espouse you until their dying days. That's the kind of customer that I want, right?
Yep.
So the opposite of this is just selling your product or service, which is okay, but finding out that this happy customer never really feels compelled to suggest you or your products or services to a friend, to talk about you on social media, to ever buy from you again, or anything else that a raving fan might do, right? So selling stuff is good, but if that's the end of the relationship, I bought from you once, done. I don't even want to subscribe to your newsletter. I don't want you to send me any messages. Don't call me. Yeah, I got it covered. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Right.
That's okay because you made a sale, but that is not the way to build a brand.
Right.
You know, that's not the right kind of person that you want to have, or probably more to the point, you're not doing a really good job of building a relationship if that's how all of your customers feel.
Right. Yeah. I mean, think about some products or services that you really, really love that you get excited and passionate about and things that you've left a review about or told your neighbor about, like, oh, I tried this new thing. You've got to try it, blah, blah, blah. What made you feel that way? Right.
Absolutely.
And then how can you make your customers feel that same way about your products?
Yep. Or another way of thinking about it is, how many products and services do you ever feel that way? And a lot of people will answer zero. A lot of people say, I've never felt that way about a product or a service or a company. But find people who have that feeling and ask them, what, you know, which two or three products do you feel that way about and why?
Right.
You know, why is my product not in that mix?
Right. We have regular wars in our house about iPhone versus Android. Because I am the only iPhone user in my family. The other three use Androids, and I think their phones are always crashing and they're losing their phone chargers and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, if you had an iPhone.
I just heard yesterday that there was some kind of update to the Android operating system.
Oh, it's crashing all the phones. My daughter was freaking out yesterday when that happened. Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, well, you had an iPhone.
That doesn't happen on an iPhone.
I know. Anyway, shameless plug. Okay, moving on.
There you go.
Let's wrap this up. So,
go ahead.
Yeah, so if you have any questions about how to make your brand more about your customers, how to change the wording on your website or any of your marketing things to be more client-centric, if you just feel like your brand is stuck in a rut, we would love to talk to you about it. If you haven't picked an archetype yet or you want to learn more about this archetype thing that we talk about all the time, go to brandarchetypes.com. Check out our website. There's a page on each archetype. There's also a free questionnaire that you can take in the upper left-hand corner to kind of get a direction on which archetype you're leaning towards. And again, we have those word lists if you need help with some more words for your archetype. And as always, please follow us on all the social media platforms that you use at Brand Archetypes. Kevin, have a wonderful birthday weekend.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.